Well, we're in week two of our series of Lessons Learned and Attention from The Breakfast Club. And one thing that always stood out to me in that movie is how when each of the five students come into detention, they're all looking around the room, and they all look at each other and just assume that they've got things worse than everybody else does. And for most of them, I mean, it's sort of like one of those moments where I'm like, oh, to be young and have your biggest problem in the world be your parents. And that's really what a lot of their issues all focus on, is that for some of the kids, it's they feel this pressure from their parents, whether it be for grades or to succeed in athletics. On the other end of the spectrum are kids who just feel like their parents don't care at all, don't even care if they're in the room, don't really give them any love or attention, and so they talk about how difficult that is. For others, there's abusive situations. For others, they feel like they're a pawn just in a parent's battle between one another. And so they're each looking at everybody else, and they just assume that everybody else in the room has it so much better than what they have when they first show up that morning. And one by one, each of them just begins to tell their story. And this is so, you know, as much a parallel to what happens in our own life. We all go through life and look at our own situations. We compare our reality to everybody else's highlight reel. We compare what we're struggling with to what everybody else is going through. And it seems like as if we all move down to this one funnel, which asks this question, why me? Why is God allowing this to happen to me? It's like we feel like as if we're being singled out or left out, if you will. And God's basically saying, I'm going to bless all these other people, but Steve, I'm going to choose you to really mess your life up. Or I'm going to care about all these other people, but I'm just going to leave you out in the cold. I'm not going to pay you any attention or give you any help. You're kind of on your own in this. And we all go through this time where we have this perception that God's forgotten us. And this isn't just a you and me kind of thing. This is something that even the great Bible heroes, if you will, throughout history have struggled with. You go back to David in Psalm 13. He writes, he knows God's called him to be the next king, but he goes years and it doesn't seem like anything's happening. It doesn't seem like that's ever going to happen. Like as if, God, if you wanted me to be the next king, I saw you tracking, I saw you working in this. I was working in the palace. My best friend was Jonathan and he was the king's son and everything was working really well and I was the king's lead general. But now I'm out here in the middle of the wilderness, and I'm being hunted down, and my life's at risk. And he says in Psalm 13, just words that maybe you can identify with, he says, God, how long are you going to forget about me? I mean, how long am I going to be out here and feel like as if I'm all alone, like you don't care? How long am I going to feel like I'm the only one that you've forgotten? Elijah felt this after he had that great confrontation with the prophets of Baal up on Mount Carmel. You see him over in 1 Kings chapter 19, and he looks up to God and he says, you know, God, I've served you with my best effort. I've been zealous in everything I've done. I've put all my heart, soul, and passion into doing everything you've asked me to do. And yet, what have I gotten? The Israelites have rejected your covenants. They've torn down your altars. They've put all the prophets to death with a sword. And he says, what? I'm the only one left. And now they're trying to kill me too. It's like, don't you care? What's it all been worth for anyway? I feel like I'm the only one. And it's shortly after that God reassures him and God comes and he says, no, you're not alone. I'm here with you. And then it was shortly after that Elisha is sent to Elijah to come along his side and work alongside him and say, no, you're not the only one. You may feel like you're the only one, but you're not the only one. Probably my favorite of all of them, though, is Jeremiah in his book that he writes about what he experienced through the fall of Israel. He says this. He says in Jeremiah chapter 20, verse 7, he says, God, you deceived me, and I allowed myself to be deceived. Basically says, you know, I gave everything to you, God. I made myself vulnerable. I did everything you asked me to do, and I feel like as if you've deceived me. I feel like you've left me out, and you know, shame on me for allowing it to happen is kind of where he's at. He says, you know, you overpowered and you prevailed me, and I'm just ridiculed all day long. Everyone mocks me. I'm just a laughing stock at this point. Or maybe you could identify with John the Baptist, who is in prison, and he has a sense that there's a death sentence coming on him, which ultimately would happen. And he sends word to Jesus, are you the one, or should I be looking for somebody else? Because I'm all alone here. I would have thought you'd come rescued me. I didn't think this is how it was going to turn out. I kind of thought the plan was I was going to lead the way. You were going to come in afterwards. I'd sort of like be the MC, and I'd be like, you know, shining the spotlight on you and let you sort of take over, take center stage, and I'd be there as your support. I didn't really foresee this whole thing working out where I sort of lead the way and I introduce you, and then I'm taken out. That wasn't really what I thought was in the script. I mean, are you really the one? Did I get something wrong here? Because I'm kind of feeling left out. I'm kind of feeling like I'm forgotten over here right now. And so you're not the only one who's asked that question, why me? God, don't you care? To start off every year, I preach the same message every January. First message of the year is always the same message on the same passage. You can mark it down. It's going to be the same next year, the same year after that, the same the year after that. And it's out of Matthew chapter 7. It's how Jesus ends the longest recorded sermon we have of him in the Bible. It's the Sermon on the Mount. And when he gets to the end of it, he tells this story. And in the story, he basically makes a prediction for what you can expect in your life. And so the reason why I start off every year is because I just want everybody to know, here's the forecast for this year. It's going to rain. There's going to be rain in your forecast this year. It's going to come down. Rain symbolizing, there's going to be difficult times. There's going to be some things that unexpectedly come. With the rains comes a flood. With the flood comes a potential disaster. And so just so you know, before we get into wherever what's going to happen this coming year, you just got to know, forecast shows rain. And Jesus ends off and he tells this little parable, this little story. He says, everybody who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who's building his house on a rock. And the rain came down, and the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet they did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and doesn't put them into practice is like a foolish man who builds his house on sand. And when the rain comes down and the streams rise, and the winds blew and beat against that house, it fell with a great crash. So we're saying there's a constant that's going to happen, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, there's a constant that happens is that the rains are going to come. It's going to rain. The streams are going to rise. The wind is going to beat against your life, against your house, everything you've built, everything you've given your life to. That is going to happen. That is a part of what's going to happen. That's in the forecast. And what makes all the difference in how you go through life, it isn't in finding a path that avoids the rain. Because rain comes down on both these two people. It isn't in what you hear or what you learn along the way, whether you're what you hear about God or what you learn along the way or what you've experienced. It's not about any of that because both people are hearing the same message. Both people are learning the same things. He says the difference in how you go through life, when the rains come and when the winds beat against your life and when the storms come in your life, the difference is in what you've applied from what you've learned from God's word. The difference is the application. It's not in the hearing. It's not in the reading, it's not in the learning, it's in the applying. You know, whether or not your marriage can make it through a storm depends on whether or not the two of you have been applying what you've learned in God's word. Whether or not your life is going to remain intact with all of the things that's come at it this past year is heavily dependent on whether or not you applied everything that you'd learned up until now. And so I always begin off the year by saying, let's look back over where God's led us, because where he's led us this past year is what he's using to prepare us for whatever is to come, for the rains and the storms that are to come this year. And so I was looking back over this past year, and there were two series that just kept standing out to me. I've referred to them several times over the past couple weeks. One of them was the In Transit series, which was almost a year ago that we started the In Transit series. It was all about the unexpected transitions of life and how it's not the changes in life that trip you up and get you. It's the transitions that you have to make in life. See, change is all situational. Change is all about what's happening around you. There's a lot of things in our world that is changing right now. And while we focus on the change, and we might, you know, look at the change and say the change is where my problem is, your actual problem is on the internal side of it. It's the transition that you need to make. The transition is a psychological adjustment that you're making to the situational changes around you. And what it is, it's not the change that blindsides us. It's the need for the transition to adjust to that change. That's where we have all of our issues and our problems. And we talked in that series how the transition begins with letting go with something that you believed or assumed. The transition, when a change around you is happening, you have to let go of something you believed or you assumed. There's a lot of things we assumed about our economy, about our job, about our family structure. A lot of things we assumed going into this year that have changed. And you've got to change now those assumptions. You got to change maybe some of your beliefs about those things. And so it begins with letting go of some things you've always believed. It may mean that you need to change the way you've always seen yourself, or the way that you've always been, or the way you've always interacted with people. Your outlook on the world or your attitude towards others changes, because the transition has three phases. The phase one is the end. There's the end of something, and we would all look around and say we kind of know what the end was. The end is, you know, the end of the world as we knew it and what we understand things. You know, so much of what we understood or what we thought about life seemed to have ended a couple weeks ago. And then there's this neutral zone, this no man's land, this time of lostness, reflection, personal assessment. Maybe some of you have been going through that. Maybe some of you have been avoiding that. But either way, we've been sitting here on quarantine in these stay-at-home orders with everything shut down, and we keep wondering, when is this going to end? And it's hard to know when a wilderness period is going to end, when this middle period is going to end. But the key is to use that time in the middle to make that psychological transition, to prepare yourself for the changes that are to come. And then, of course, the final section of a transition is the new beginning, where that is beginning to start right now, where we're beginning to open things back up, and we're beginning to see what the, I know it's almost like an overused cliche at this point, what the new norm is going to be like moving forward. And so we're moving into that time. And of course, this transitional process parallels the death, burial, resurrection. That death, it's a very difficult, hard thing. You think about the disciples when they watch Jesus die, and then that time of the burial. I mean, I'm sure that Saturday it was probably the longest Saturday in all of history, the day after Jesus died, but before he rose from the dead. And we go through that long period of time of everything in your life's been shaken. And then, of course, there's the resurrection time that they had to adjust to the new reality, that there is life after death, and that he is who he said he was. And so we all have to make these transitions along the way. And the reality is the world around us has changed. And whether or not you're going to transition to how the world around you has changed is going to determine whether or not you're able to thrive this coming year, or whether you're going to continue to hit roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. And everything is going to be a challenge. And there's going to be a tendency for you to look at the challenges that are unique to you in your life and somehow feel like as if you've got it worse than everybody else, that your challenges, because you'll know what's unique to you because of your situation, your family situation, your financial situation, your work situation, your job field, and you'll see the unique challenges to you, and you'll have this idea or this sense that this has been worse for you than it is for everybody else. Because when you go back to work, if you go back to work, everything's going to be different. There's going to be new procedures. There's going to be PPE issues, there's going to be social distancing issues, health screenings, etc. And everything's going to be new. You have to learn it all new, and you're going to think to yourself, it's harder for me in my industry than everything else. Or perhaps maybe you've got childcare issues, because let's face it, kids don't understand personal space, let alone social distancing. I mean, my kids constantly are, even to this day, they're older, and they still go, hey, Dad, look at this. Look, Dad. See, isn't this cool? Look at this, man. Look at this. Look. I mean, I can't possibly see anything an inch from my face. I can't see that. Just, can we back up for just 1 second? Kids are notorious for being close talkers and all up in your business all the time. How are they possibly going to do social distancing? How is that going to work going forward? And so there's all kinds of childcare issues that they're not in school right now. The summer, we used to have this system of schools and summer camps, things like that, that all just kind of flowed. And now it's just like everything's shut down, figure it out. And so you know, each of you are going to have different unique challenges along the way with what comes out. And you're going to feel like as if you're the only one, or you've got it worse than other people because of your situation, or because of your job, or because of the hours that you work. There's going to be financial challenges in the uncertain economy and job market, and how this all transitions from just right when I was starting to get my unemployment thing set up. Now I've got to go back to work, but not as many hours. So do I transition from partial unemployment? How's this all work? There's going to be a lot of uncertainty going forward. For some of you, your health care and your insurance has all changed because of jobs or unemployments or how that's going to work. And there's a lot of uncertainty about all of this. And all of you are going to feel, why me? Why am I the only one struggling with this? Why is it that this is harder for me than everybody else? Seems like everybody else seems to be figuring this out, but yet it's all harder for me. And the transitions that we're going to have to go through coming up are all going to be, you know, adjusting to the changes that are before us. And one of the things you got to realize is you're not the only one going through these changes. Everybody's going through them. Everybody's having to make the transition and the adjustment. And it's hard for all of us. It's hard for everybody. There's nobody who walks through this and says, oh, this is going to be easy. It's going to be a walk in the park. The other series that really stood out to me from this past year was one that we did at the end of the summer, right as school was beginning last year. And it was a series called Fear Itself, taken from Roosevelt's famous speech that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. It was on fear, worry, and anxiety. And just some of the takeaways from that, we talked about how what you fear the most is typically where you trust God the least. And so if you look just, you know, in the past couple months, whatever your biggest fears are is really revealing where it is that you struggle in your ability to trust God. And we talked about how you need to move from the fear of what if, you know, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? We need to move from the fear of what if thinking to the faith of even if. And that's where you see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They look at the king and King Nebuchadnezzar, and they say to him, hey, you're going to throw us in the fiery furnace, and we're going to trust that God's going to save us, but even if he doesn't. They have this unshakable faith that says, basically, even if the worst case scenario comes down, I know that God is with us, and he is for us, and I can trust him. And moving from the fear of what if, that basically says, what if everything I know is changed? What if nothing returns back to the way it was? What if everything is shaken? It's moved from that sort of fear type mentality to the faith mentality that says, even if all that happens, it's okay because I know God's in control. He's still got my back. I know he knows what he's doing. And we talked about in that series how we have to have the unshakable confidence of knowing that God is with us. There are 365 times in Scripture God says, do not fear or fear not. Because he knows it's sort of instinctual with us, because when we lose sight of our relationship with God and just how much he means to us, we begin to have this sense of fear because we see things are out of control or beyond our control, and we forget that God is ultimately in control and that he is with us and he loves us. And so often, most of the time, when God says, do not fear, what follows right after that is he says, because I am with you. I am with you. When God sent Jesus to earth, and he forecasted that he was going to be doing that back in Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14, he says, you know, he will be called Emmanuel, which means God with us. That just the very fact that God sent Jesus to us would be a sign and a reminder that God is with us and God is for us. The writer of Hebrews brings back all the Old Testament promises, and he says in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, he says, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid, for what can mere mortals do to me? He just has a sense of, you know, God is going to be with you. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. I'll always be with you. And what that means when it says God is with you, it doesn't mean you won't go through difficult times. It doesn't mean that your plans won't be changed along the way. It doesn't mean that you won't have a lot of pain and loss that comes into your life. What it simply means is at the end of the day, you'll look back and you'll say, it was worth it. You'll be able to look back at the end of the day and say, I'm so glad I did it. I'm so glad I walked this life. And you'll be able to, at some point, be able to look back. Maybe it'll be on the other side of eternity. You look back and say, you know, I see now God had a plan for me all along. And there was never a day that I ever walked through any path, through any journey alone. That's why David, you know, the same David who says, how long are you going to forget me forever? It's the same guy who later on would say, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not fear for what? For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So the same guy who struggled sometimes to wonder, God, are you with me? Are you here me? Are you near me? Later on could look back over his life and say, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in the green pastures. And he goes on to say, even in my difficult times, I can look back now and I know I don't need to fear those times because I know God is with me. The last night Jesus was with his disciples, he shared with him many things. He talks about he's going to be going away. He says, I want you to love one another just as I've loved you. And then he kind of comes all to the very end of it. In John chapter 16, verse 33, it's recorded that one of the things he said to them is he says, you know, I've told you all these things, all these teachings, all the stuff I've shared with you, the time I've been with you. I've told you all these things so that in me you might have peace. Because in this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I've overcome the world. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. It's almost kind of very Jesus-like to just so matter-of-factly come out and say, hey, y'all are going to have a lot of problems, all right? You're going to have trouble. Like I told you in my sermon, the rains are going to come. The wind's going to beat against your house, all right? You're going to have trouble. Just mark it down. You're going to have trouble in your life from all different sources. For some of us, our troubles come from our own bad choices. We make a lot of bad choices, and it creates a lot of trouble or problems in our life. We look back over and we say, yeah, so many things I'm struggling with right now is because of a series of bad choices or bad decisions along the way. Other times we have trouble that comes into our life simply because we made good choices. We even have cliches about this, that you know, no good deed ever goes what? No good deed ever goes unpunished. And we have those things where we realize that because of people's selfishness and cruelty and greed, even when you try to help them, there's still the opportunity that leaves you open and vulnerable for them to hurt you. So sometimes the problems we go through is simply because we tried to do the right thing or we tried to be nice to somebody. And so we even wonder, you know, should I even continue being nice? Why? Because even sometimes our good choices lead to problems and troubles. Sometimes the troubles that come into our life is because of a loss. And many of us have gone through a lot of loss this past year. And so a lot of the troubles we're facing is from a job loss or an economy loss or a friendship loss along the way. Eventually, we all will lose somebody that we love or care about. And so many of these losses are beyond our control. They're not things that you could predict or control, that loss happens. It's a part of life. And then there's another element of trouble that comes into our life simply because of just the chaos of life. There's a chaos to life that ever since the fall of humanity, if you go back to Genesis 3, it's like everything was God adds order to everything he created in Genesis 1 and 2. And when humanity turns away from God, it's like it thrusts the world into this system of chaos where things are not as ordered and not as neat and not as beautiful as God had once made it in the beginning. And so there's so much chaos around us, and it forces us to have problems. We call, you know, we always have to find a creative solution to all the problems. A lot of the problems that you're facing right now is because of the chaos that this pandemic has created. And there's a lot of things that aren't as ordered or as neat or in line as they once were before. And so you're having to deal with the chaos of trying to resume life as different elements of society are coming back online at different times. Like your childcare isn't coming online the same time that your job is asking you to come back. The money that is supposed to be in your account isn't there yet because of delays along. There's all kinds of chaos that you're having to deal with, which creates a lot of the trouble you face in life. And I think part of the job description for moms is chaos manager. We just celebrated Mother's Day last week, and I was thinking about how moms are our chaos managers. We have this sign in our house on the wall that says, you might call it chaos, we just call it family. Because there's so much chaos that just goes into family life, right? And so a lot of the problems we face, it's like Jesus saying, listen, in this life, you will have trouble. He could have just said, in this life, you'll have kids. It's almost the same thing. You'll have chaos that comes into your life, and it just continues to grow and grow over time. You never get to this promised land of a chaos-free life. No matter how much you think you are, no matter how much you've planned it out, there's no such thing as a chaos-free life because we live in a fallen world. And there's always going to be troubles that are associated. You can't eliminate all possibilities for trouble or problems in your life. You can't insulate yourself from everything. And I think if this pandemic showed us anything, it's shown us that right there, that nobody is immune from the chaos and the uncertainty of life. And when Jesus says that in this life you'll have trouble, he's talking, the word trouble that he's using here is an interesting word. It's a word that means an internal pressure. It's sort of like when we say we feel like the walls are closing in or we feel like this big weight is down upon us. That's the Greek word that he's using here, that there's this internal pressure that seems to be squeezing us from within and forcing us to move in directions we didn't want to move or to go in. And as I think about this pressure coming in and the trouble that we're facing, Jesus, you know, comes back and what's his word? He says, you know, you're going to have this pressure that comes in on you. He says, but take heart or take courage. You can face your fears. You know, fear, we talked about how courage is the knowledge that there is something more important than what it is that we fear. There's something greater or more powerful than what it is that we fear. So he says, take courage. Why? Because I've overcome the world. Now, that's an interesting statement from a guy who is about to be arrested, beaten, and killed, for him to say, I've overcome the world. But what he's saying is, it reminds me back of a Christmas long ago when my sister was a senior in college, I was a junior, and we were home on Christmas break, and she'd been dating John, who's now her husband, for quite some time, and John was one of my close friends in college, and the thing is it's really hard to ever surprise my sister, because she always wants to know everything and, you know, is involved in everything, and so John really wanted the engagement or, you know, his proposal to be a surprise for her. And so for Christmas break that year, he made up the story about how he had to, you know, be with his family for Christmas, and then he would try to make it over across the state to see her after Christmas. And it was her final year of college. She was a year ahead of him in school, and so she'd be graduating, and she already had, you know, her next school lined up where she was going to go next for graduate studies. And he still had more time there, and so they were going to be apart the next year. And so she was kind of nervous and worried that, you know, well, I really kind of was hoping that we would get engaged because, you know, then I would know that when I leave next year that, you know, we're going to go and we're going to make this work, and this is going to be a relationship for the long term. And what she didn't know that I knew was that he had already bought the ring, and this whole him not being with her for Christmas was all a ruse. That he actually, when we were there Christmas shopping that day, he was actually already in his car with ring in hand on the way to see her. And that night, that very night, he was going to propose to her. He had it all planned out. He even called me since I knew the area. He says, all right, where is the best place in her hometown to do the proposal? And he kind of told me what kind of setting, what kind of place he wanted. And so I said, all right, here's what you need to do. I'd given him directions and mapped it all out for him. And so I was a part of all this, but I couldn't say anything to her. And so I'll never forget, we were sitting at Subway eating lunch. And she finally got to the point where she just broke down. She kind of lost it. And she was just frustrated. And she was nervous about, you know, what if he doesn't want to be with me? What if he doesn't propose? Well, you know, what if we go through the rest of this year and it just doesn't happen? And it was one of these sort of, you know, odd moments, because I'm sitting there across from her and I know information that if I were to say it, it would do two things. One, it would completely spoil the surprise that John has planned for her. But it would also bring her great comfort and sort of ease all of her fears. But I can't say that. I've got to withhold this information from her. I can't tell her why, because of the beauty of what is going to happen that night and what is being prepared and planned for her would be totally ruined if I tried to ease her and comfort her and take away her fears in this moment. And so I can't say anything. And so I'm trying to sort of be a good friend, brother, and encourage her and comfort her along the way, even though I can't say anything. And so, you know, she would be frustrated. I'd say, listen, I know John loves you. I know John wants to marry you. And I remember she looked back at me and she's like, no, he doesn't. You know, well, at least not right now. And if he doesn't do it right now, then, you know, what if I graduate and it doesn't happen and we're in different places, you know, and it's hard with a long-distance relationship. You never know what's going to happen then. I'm like, Karen, come on. I'm sure it's going to be okay. No, it won't. You know, I think I'm right on this one. Can you just trust me? I know John. He's been a friend of mine longer than you've even known him. Yeah, you may have known him longer, but I know him better than you now. And we're going back and forth with this. And the reality is, he already had the ring. And he was already on his way. And if he could in that moment, he would just be able to call her and say, take heart. All of your worries, all of your fears have been overcome. They've been taken care of. And as Jesus is sitting there at the Last Supper with his disciples, it's a man with a ring, or sorry, with cash in his hand to buy the ring. He's already got it. He's already got the money. He already knows where he's going to buy the ring from. He's on his way to the store to buy the ring and then come give it to you. And so he looks at his disciples. He says, listen, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have times of fear and doubt and worry. You're going to have times where you wonder if you're all alone in the midst of this. But just know this. You're going home for Christmas break. I got cash in the hand. It's going to happen. I'm coming back. I'm coming down. I'm on my way. I bought the ring. You're going to be my bride. We're going to live together forever, for all eternity. Because after all, the reason why I created you was so that you and I could have a loving relationship that would last for all eternity. I haven't given up on that. I haven't given up on you. No matter what you've done, no matter what you've become, I'm coming for you. And even though right now you might feel alone, or you might feel like you're the only one, or you might feel like you're going through something more difficult than everybody else, just know. I've overcome. I've got the ring in hand. Oh, I'm on my way. And if I were to come in and ruin the story and tell you everything that's going to happen, it would take away all the surprises and all the joys and everything that's going to be so special about what it is that God has prepared for you and what it is to come. And that's the message I just want to leave with you right now. As Jesus forecasts, he says, in his life, you're going to have rain. The rain's going to come down. The storms are going to beat against your house. But if you'll just apply everything it is that God's taught you and showed you, you'll weather that storm. He says, because in this life, you will face trouble. The rains will come down, but take heart. Have courage. have this sense and understanding, listen, I've overcome the world. I've conquered death. I've conquered sin. I've conquered every problem you're ever going to face. I've got the ring in hand. You're going to be my bride, and for all eternity, we're going to live together. Because this life is about nothing more than a loving relationship that you and I will enjoy for all eternity. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for this gift and for this promise that no matter how hard life gets and no matter how difficult things are, that you will never leave us nor forsake us. That nothing will change your plans to want to spend all of eternity with us. So, Father, as we go through the difficult transitions and changes that are coming our way this year, may we do so knowing, Father, that you are with us. And that doesn't mean you'll take away all of our problems or take away all of our pain. But there will come a day and a time where we can look back and say, yes, God, you were with me that whole time. And what you were doing in that season of uncertainty was bringing me to a place more beautiful than I ever could have imagined. So we thank you for these promises, and in Jesus' name, amen.